Hello and welcome everybody to episode 6 of A Yankee in King Regal's Court. I am, as always, your host, Anthony, with my co-host, Tack Brown. How are you doing today, bud?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. You're going to have to be comfortable with the fact that I am now a cowboy. I've been playing so much Red Dead, I've just decided now that I am now a cowboy. I'm going to get a horse and a hat and some spurs and I'm going to be an outlaw.
So the last 3 days, you've been playing nothing but Red Dead Redemption, yeah?
Yes. I've played like 45 hours in the last 3 days.
Since Friday?
Since Friday, yeah.
That's an insane... Man, I'm still on an Xbox 360, so like all this Red Dead Redemption hype is like killing me.
Oh man, it's like it's the future of games. I've never played anything like it. It's incredible.
What's your favorite aspect of it so far?
Just the size of it. Like I said, I've played like coming up to 50 hours, and I'm like maybe 15-20% through it.
Oh my God.
I haven't even uncovered the whole map yet. There's still like over half of the map for me to discover. Because there's just so much stuff to do all the time. It's ridiculous.
How much did you have to... How long was the wait to like download everything?
Well, I did a pre-order download. So when it hits midnight on Thursday into Friday, it's just instantly available. So I'm not really sure. I didn't watch it. I just downloaded it overnight like a week before.
Nice.
Because I know it's pretty huge. Like file size wise, but like earlier on today, I spent like 3 hours just fishing, like just hunting for these like elusive fish that they wanted to catch. And that it's crazy.
So now that you've wandered the west of America in 1800s,
yeah.
Do you understand a little bit more about? Do you feel a more of a connection to the American culture?
Now
that you know,
really.
Kind of like that individualism and that self-drive that really pushes.
I think they're going for like a the story has a big lean on the sort of, because it's set in 1899, and it's a big lean of like the old school way against like the new school way. So like the city, there's like cities popping up here and there, but most of it's still like massive open areas of wilderness and stuff, and people just try like scratching and fighting their way to get ahead kind of thing. I think it's supposed to be kind of like I don't think they meant for it to be like seem like fun, if you know what I mean. Like it's supposed to seem like hard work, but to me it just looks awesome. Well, I'd love to like be living in a tent hunting buffaloes and stuff. That seems kind of cool compared to city life that I'm used to nowadays.
Yeah, you guys never, I guess the Brits never really had that, like, age of exploration within England over the last, like, century or two, right? Like, because that was, like, the 1800s for us was, you know, that Manifest Destiny pushing west and kind of, like, that unknown wilderness.
Yeah, that's what the whole story's about, like, pushing west, and then they end up going south, even though he's a Yankee. Like the main leader of the game is like a Yankee, and he's kind of forced into going south, but he doesn't really want to.
Well, no one ever wants to go south.
it's cool because you start like up in the mountains, and you end up in the bayous and stuff as you go, and then like all around the sort of the south. I'm roaming the south hunting alligators and things at the minute, which is pretty cool.
You're going to come over to America, and you're going to just know where everything's at, and you're going to fit right into that Louisiana. The Cajun lifestyle, if you're not careful.
Oh, it looks amazing to me. I don't mind that at all. That'd be great.
Until you get down there and you realize like how big the mosquitoes are, and also you're dodging like witchcraft and voodoo.
And all they mentioned the mosquitoes quite a lot in the game, so I assume that that's a big issue.
can you die of malaria? Is that part?
So. Well, in the game, I don't know. Possibly. Yeah.
Oh well, obviously in real life, yes, malaria is a thing, but. In the game,
I don't know. My horse died. I was genuinely gutted about that.
Really?
Like, yeah, I accidentally got it hit by a train, and I was distraught because I'd spent like the first 25 hours like building up because you have to like build your relationship with your horse, and then I accidentally got it hit by a train, and I was absolutely devastated.
Did you not understand what train tracks are? Because you guys have more trains than we do.
I was fishing off a train bridge, and I didn't realise that my horse had followed me until I heard the impact. I thought I'd left it out of the way, and then I just heard, like, the terrified cries of a horse being destroyed by a high-speed train.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
So a lesson to be more aware of my surroundings, I suppose.
If you ever come over here, the first thing you realize is you never go on a train bridge. Like, I mean, that's left over from, you know, Stand By Me.
I was going to say, yeah, I've seen Stand By Me. I know how it works. The train always comes when you're halfway across.
Exactly.
Usually, well, if somebody's foot stuck in the bridge as well.
Have you had to save any women that are, like, wrapped up, like, or tied up on the tracks by somebody that looks suspiciously like Trent Seven?
Not yet, but there is a villain in a top hat with a curly mustache who I've come across. So I'm hoping that's what he gets up to later on in the game. I don't know yet.
Oh, that's all right. I'm going to have to do whatever I can to get this game because this sounds amazing. I might have to wait till the summer because I don't have time right now with teaching and everything. I can't give 50 hours of my life just to get 15% into a game.
I usually can't, but that was the first one was one of my favorite games of all time. So I was like, right, I've got time to use from work and I'm treating myself.
Nice. Well, you know, you got to take care of you. You know, no one's going to love you like you do. So, but with that, you know, I guess that's going to close our video game corner of the week. So we will get into our news, which big news out of Dublin with Over the Top Wrestling. Pac has announced that he's going to be back wrestling back into the kingdom. And actually, he's been announced for ODT, Rev Pro, and Big League Wrestling out of Yeovil.
Yeovil, yeah.
Yeovil, all right.
Yeovil or Yeovil, whichever's either is fine.
All right, and that's out in the southwest. Is that out by Corning?
That kind of way, yeah, Cornwall, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, we were saying last week, like, where's he going to pop up here if he does it all? And then they've literally announced, like, at least, I think maybe one or two more places have announced him as well over today. So he's definitely planning to work a lot around the UK.
So what do we think about him going to Rev Pro? We know he's in a pretty big storyline with RED in Dragon Gate, but Rev Pro's been pretty much the feeder system into New Japan.
Yeah.
So how are we reading this into, like, him going to Rev Pro versus him going to Progress?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it was talked about because they were talking about who was going to challenge Trent Seven at today's Progress show, and there was somebody said Puck, and they said, like, we're gonna say straight away that it's not him, but they've also said they won't rule him out for future chapters. So yeah, it's still a bit kind of up in the air there of whether or not he will end up working for Progress at some point. But I think it's wicked he's at Rev Pro, but like you say, it's a bit odd that he's working for Dragon Gate but then Rev Pro. It seems a little bit a bit odd.
But also, I think in Japan, you see a lot more of that kind of crossover than you do, like, you know, like with over there, it's a lot more common to see guys like cross over. And like, I know Mirafuji and Shingo, they both worked the G1 Climax a few years ago while they were working for Noah. So I know, like, and they just announced the Giant Baba anniversary show. They're having, like, All Japan, New Japan, and not Big Japan. One of the other, and Noah. I'm dumb. And Noah, they're all going to be working together for Giant Baba. So there is a little bit of
crossover then.
Yeah. Like, crossover over there is not as, like, unheard of as it is, like, stateside or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he lands next. He's obviously he's obviously trying to work a lot in while he's here, so it'll be interesting to see where else his name pops up over the coming weeks.
So how do you feel about him facing Jake McCuskey and Dean Allmark for big league?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about Jake McCuskey, but Dean Allmark's he was a TNA guy, among other things, so he's a high flyer. He's great to watch. He's very... I don't think he's quite as good as Puck is, but he's that same style. Right. Aggressive high flyer, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, he fits that style really well. Does that style really well. So yeah, I think that'd be, because I think that's the first show that he'll be appearing on timeline wise. So yeah, it'll be good to see him getting his boots back on against guys like that. Because I think, from what I can gather, Jake McCuskey's really a high flyer as well. So it's going to be chaotic, I think, is probably the best word to describe what that should be.
Right. Have they announced his OTT opponent?
Not the last I've seen. No, not yet.
Okay. Because I would love if that's Devlin.
Yeah, Devlin would be great. They haven't announced anything for Rev Pro yet either. Which there have been a few names mentioned for that as well, but they haven't actually said who it's going to be. And there was for OTT, there was a hint that it might be Ospreay. They said something online that started everybody saying that they thought it was going to be Ospreay, but they've not confirmed or denied that. So.
Oh, and Ospreay's out with an injury right now.
Yeah.
He had to drop out of this match against Taichi for the Never.
Yeah. Is he out for long? Is he? Or I thought when I saw that online that he, I was sure that he was injured. I assumed it just wasn't a long-term injury.
I'm not 100% sure. Let me see here. According to With Spandex, which is my go-to reblogging of anything in all things Dave Meltzer, looks like he does not progress as quickly as we had hoped. And it looks like he just got pulled from next week's title match against Taichi. And he got injured in the UK, however his treatment has been coming along. So it doesn't really look like they have a time frame back for him. But I don't know. We'll see. So hopefully, all the best to him and he can get back as soon as possible. And, maybe he does make the OTT, but if he's getting pulled from a title match, I think that's pretty big.
Yeah, definitely. If it's something he can't even just try and work hurt with, then it's definitely something relatively important, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's been a little susceptible to injury, yeah?
Yeah, but I think that's just part and parcel with that style of wrestling that he does.
Yeah.
Because it is the it's high risk, high reward, but high risk, isn't it? So doing the stuff that he does, you're bound to take a few more injuries.
Yeah, that is true. So that's pretty much it for news. And of course, right now, as we record right now, it is 11:39 West Coast time, 7:39 Greenwich Mean. And right now we got Pumpkin Spice Progress going on, and we don't know any of the results. However, we're still going to go through some predictions, and we'll have a full card review next week for you when that drops on demand. But right now, let's go through the card. And starting with Paul Robinson and Mark Andrews, this is Paul Robinson's first chapter match since coming back at the Wembley show. And he's going against our, I don't know, just maybe like the vanilla, our vanilla taste, Mark Majors, Mehdrews.
Mark Mehdrews, yeah.
Mark Mehdrews. So what do you think of this match?
I mean, I'm happy to see Robbo back. But there's a lot of people I would have put him against before I put him against Andrews.
Yeah.
Unless this somehow leads to Andrews versus Robinson hardcore match where Robbo gets to make him bleed a bit, then I might be marginally more interested there. But yeah, it's a decent, it's always going to be a good match. I think it's good bringing Robbo back if he's coming back to put him up against someone who's guaranteed to give you a halfway decent match, and sort of, it's a gentle introduction almost, isn't it? Because you know where you are with Andrews. He works very safe, even though he's quite a high flying type of wrestler. So yeah, I think it should be good fun.
I think it'll be good. I think Robinson definitely should and probably will pick up the win here. I think Andrew's been on a bit of a slide lately, and I don't quite see the reasoning why you would bring Robinson back pretty much out of like semi-retirement just to get, you know, it made just sense for him to lose the Havoc. You know, it made sense for him to lose the Havoc, but to have him lose to Andrews, I'm not quite sure how that works.
Yeah, I think hopefully they're not setting up a story there or anything, because I just can't imagine being interested in anything long term between those two. But yeah, it'd be a fun match. Yeah, it'd be interested enough, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think Robinson kind of retakes his role as kind of that gremlin that just runs around and causes havoc. Mayhem just all around. So I think he's pretty much going to take that role back now that he seems to be back full time. So we'll see. Second match we're going to look at: Millie McKenzie, Coventry City's own, versus Isla Dawn. This looks like it's going to be a pretty good match. I love Millie McKenzie. I think she's a great talent, great young talent. Isla Dawn's been coming along very well. Isla Dawn might have a little bit of an advantage with it being so close to All Hallows Eve and her being a witch. So
no problem at all. Millie's like the witch hunter. She just, I mean, Millie should win everything ever, in my opinion, because she's amazing. But and she's our Coventry girl. But yeah, I think I guess Isla Dawn's on there because, you know, it's the spooky Halloween show. So yeah. I guess she's going to be like in full on witch regalia and stuff. But Millie's technically still almost a child. So it's almost like the trick or treat versus the scary witch. It's going to be like Hocus Pocus in a wrestling ring. That's what it's going to be like.
I love it. And Millie McKenzie, I don't see how she loses. Millie McKenzie is, I think, maybe one or two matches away from the main event at all times. The main event and the title at all times.
Yeah. It could be a spot where we get some interference from Ginny and a little bit more clarity of what's going on there.
Very true. Oh, yeah, especially with...
Be surprised.
Yeah. I'm surprised Ginny's not on this match, especially with the... Or on this card without... Especially with the big turn from Wembley.
Yeah, that's what makes me think that we might be... you might see her there, just because she's conspicuous in her absence on that card, I think.
Very true. But, I mean, if it goes clean, I'm going to have to go Millie McKenzie in this one. I think, like I said, I think all the momentum's with her. I think, yeah, throughout England, Millie McKenzie's really been killing it. And I'm really interested to see her as she's teaming up with No Fun Done. And I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, she's an anti-fun police now. She's also still a bruiser mate as well, though.
Oh, that is true. That is true. Bruiser mate is a great tag team. I love that whole idea. All right, so next we go to Aussie Open's first defense of the tag titles that they won at Wembley in the tag team Thunder Bastard match. That is Aussie Open versus the 198 versus Grizzled Young Vets.
Yeah, that's an easy start for them there, isn't it?
Yeah, a bit of a stacked match your first defense of one of the major titles.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, wow, they're really stacking the deck against them straight away. But I suppose they're the type of team that are going to thrive on being fighting champions.
I like it. However, I think the titles go back to the Grizzled Young Vets. I think.
Oh, you think already?
I think so. I think the Aussie Open win was a little bit of a reward because they're progressing so much and they're really good, and also just to kind of pop the crowd a little bit at Wembley. But at the end of the day, I think Grizzled Young Vets should have the titles. I think that's just They should always have the tag, any tag titles that's available. Grizzled young vets should have them.
See, usually I don't like quick title drops usually, but I love Grizzled Young Veterans when they've got the titles, because it just cranks up the cocky meter to 11.
And also, I mean, they can just play the card that they didn't, you know, like they were put in an impossible situation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they never truly lost the titles.
Yeah, they didn't lose the titles, they just didn't win them.
Exactly.
That's the argument they can go with, yeah. But yeah, I'm saying Aussie Open. I think Aussie Open are going to hold on to them. I don't think they're going to drop them that quick.
Yeah.
It's not something that Progress do very often, although that title has been bounced around during the tag tournament that they did.
I think that was the whole point of that tournament, though, was a little bit to bounce that around and kind of get all the different, just to kind of get a little bit of no one quite knows where that's going to land type situation.
Yeah.
But I do love Aussie Open. I think they're a great tag team. I think they're a good, young, solid tag team that really is going to be very interesting to see if they try to stay in England or if we're going to get a little bit of that, you know, South Pacific power couple situation where they end up leaving because, you know, when their visa runs out.
I'm hoping they've learned from others' mistakes with that, because especially the guys from Australia and New Zealand, they seem to have those sort of problems ironed out now.
Yeah.
I think the ones who suffered with the and struggled with the visa issues of like sort of everyone else is learning from those mistakes. So it seems like they're going to be able to stick around for a while.
Oh, definitely. I hope so. I love Aussie Open. I think they're doing so much to get on the world stage. I know they've had some really good matches in Rev Pro against New Japan Talent. And yeah. I think just being in Britain is really like kind of getting them talked about.
Yeah, they're a natural classic big guy little guy tag team. They play that like that really well. They fit their roles in that sort of tag team perfectly.
Yeah, definitely. And I wouldn't hate it if they stayed with defended the titles and kept them and moved on and like you said like kind of be that fighting champion situation, but.
It's also of note that they're the, because we were saying last week about maybe a heel turn would be on the cards from now they've got the titles, but they're definitely the baby faces in that match at least.
Kind of have
the 1-9-8 Akadi Atwinas and Grizzled Young Veterans are always going to be your monster heels.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see going forward if they're just going to play it straight baby face or how that's going to work out.
Yeah,
is any progress title as a knack to turn people evil?
The Atlas title.
That's one of your theories.
Doug, you know, he was able to kind of stay fairly.
Yeah, but he used the power of pure British patriotism to keep himself on the straight and narrow.
I guess that is true. He was coming from a. He was just drawing from the power of the past monarchies to really.
He's just so British that there was no way that he was. That stiff upper lip is made of iron. There's no way he was turning. No way.
Very true. And speaking of the Atlas Championship, that leads to Trent Seven's Open Challenge.
Yes.
I think that's a pretty good way to kind of reboot the championship storyline a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you have any predictions on who might answer? Obviously, it's not going to be Pac, but.
The last two times there's been an open challenge for the Atlas title, it's been Rampage Brown. So I'm sort of thinking, is that going to be the case again?
That could be a good one. Do we think that maybe they'll bring in somebody and debut somebody new?
I think that was the hint. But yeah, I don't know who's over here at the minute. I'll just say Rampage Brown because that's what I'm hoping for, because I love love seeing him work. He's one of my favourite big guys. I wouldn't mind seeing somebody come back as well. Maybe Big Dave Mastiff makes a reappearance.
It has been a while since we've seen Mastiff in a program.
He's always got his eye on that title.
True, true. I would love to see if Mastiff came back. I love Mastiff in Progress. I think it's been a little too long without him. You know, I think, you know, and the Atlas division is perfect for him.
Yeah, it's built for a guy like him, definitely.
Yeah, so I think they'll bring in somebody new. I think they're kind of setting themselves up for someone. If it's not going to be Mastiff and kind of like that, a big returner, you know, I think I can definitely see it being kind of a debut for somebody, especially with coming off of Wembley. I think it
makes itself
off for, you know, you kind of reset and everything.
Really gives it that sort of rebooted feel, doesn't it? And like an opening of a new story kind of thing.
Right, right. But I definitely think whoever challenges, unless it's, you know, someone that's, you know, we can't even think of that, you know, has this like huge reputation, I think Trent Seven's going to keep it, and I think he'll probably hold on to it for a while.
I think so, yeah.
So that brings us to Timothy Thatcher versus Tyler Bate. Now, you were saying Tyler Bate is currently injured, right? Before we started going?
Yeah, I think it was announced this morning before the show started that he was hurt and he had been replaced. I don't know who he's been replaced by. To have a look. But yeah, apparently he was injured.
Looking at, trying to find, look it up right now. Looks like, yeah, so looks like Progress announced this morning my time at 5:58, that he was injured and was going to miss today's show, and they were working on a plan B. So once again, it looks like we might have another surprise.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I don't think they're just going to drop Thatcher.
No, the only other way would be to maybe rejig one of the other matches and take somebody out of one and insert them somewhere else.
I mean,
the triple threat would probably be the place you'd do that if you were going to.
I was going to say, if they're going to just move Thatcher into a new match, I could see that happening at the number one contender match. I think Thatcher has a lot of, you know, he does have a lot of heat, and he's one of those guys that you can just heat up overnight and put him in a main event, and everyone will just kind of go with it.
Yeah.
But I would like to see them pull someone, maybe that, you know, is just there. Maybe, you know, Mambo or TK or...
Yeah, there's always going to be guys around. So, yeah, because the problem with breaking up that triple threat is it's a number one contenders match. So how do you explain one of them just saying, yeah, okay, I'll go and just lose my possible shot at the title to go and wrestle just a one-on-one? It's like it'd make more sense to bring someone else in, and like, there's always someone nearby who'd be able to work, especially as they're in London where a lot of the guys are based nearby. So
right, and like I said, like it seems like they have plenty of time to kind of call whoever or, you know, get somebody. So yeah, unless they add Thatcher to the three-way and just make that a fatal four-way for the number one contendership, and if they do bring in somebody, like I said, I would hope that it's, you know, maybe someone like TK or Mambo. To be fair, Progress did have a video on their Twitter earlier that Bill Lever was out working the line to get in. So he's on site.
Oh, there you go. Then that might be it.
He's on site. So.
Oh, that'd be a great match as well. I wouldn't mind that at all.
No. Eva versus Thatcher, I think, would be a great match. And
yeah, I'd be willing to bring
Eva. It's been a while since we've seen Eva, although I guess he was on the pre-show at Wembley.
Yeah.
But it's been a while since we've seen Eva on the on a proper chapter card. And Thatcher is a great you know, he can elevate anyone. So
yeah, I hope that's right. I'll be really into that.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, like, again, the only thing I saw was this. He was out running, and he's got a little bit of a new gimmick, yeah?
Who, Believer?
Yeah.
I don't really know. I'm not sure. I've not seen much of him recently.
Everything I've seen so far has been him. He's kind of ditched the Anglican priest, and he's almost like a, I don't know how to explain if it's a like a cult leader or something like that, where he's saying that, like, his talks are more like, live in today. Today's a present. Da 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 da. And today's a great day. And his outfits are a little more like, not if Bray Wyatt wasn't a hillbilly or a swamp rat, but more like a, you know.
Okay, because he was hinting at something like that before, like just starting to go that way before he got hurt. So, but yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe he's just continuing on that then. It'd certainly be interesting to see if he can sort of do something different with the same gimmick.
Right, just tweak it a little bit, make it a little more main event ready.
Yeah.
And really kind of...
Yeah, because the religious thing's always going to be problematic when you're moving on to a bigger stage.
Well, especially when it's the national religion and the religion, and it's a part of the government.
Yeah.
So it's a little, like you said, yeah, it can be a little bit problematic. So I think he did kind of pivot a little bit from what I've seen. Looks like he pivoted a little bit. And again, I think that'd be a good way to reintroduce him, reintroduce this new kind of direction that he's going. And I think it could be good. I think it would be a good way to kind of like a last second shoot, like get him in. Maybe Thatcher takes a lot, and now you're rocking and rolling with Ever.
Yeah, I'd be into that, definitely. Hopefully you're right there.
I don't know. I haven't seen any spoilers. I've been spending all morning coming up with my next unit test for Thursday. So we'll see. We'll find out next week. So that brings us to the number one contenders match. Jimmy Havoc, Mark Haskins, accompanied by Vicky Haskins and Chris Brooks. Where do we see this going?
Yeah, is this this could be the start of a bit of dissension between Havoc and Haskins, I think.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's like after the big Wembley show, it's almost like a story reset, isn't it? And they've kind of, they've been wrestling separate stories, but especially Havoc going on his kind of tangent, but they've always kept it in everyone's thoughts that they're still together, they're still a tag team.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think them two being in the same match adds another, especially with it being a number one contenders match as well, adds an extra layer of interest on there.
So do you think Chris Brooks wins, and then that sets up like a Havoc Haskins storyline?
I don't think it sets up the two of them falling out in that match, but I think it sows the seeds of that.
Right.
I think that feels like the one of them accidentally screw this. The classic wrestling storyline, isn't it? One of them accidentally causes the other one the loss, and Brooks goes on as number one contender, and those two sort of start having a bit of dissension, and the tag team breaks down over time, I would have thought.
That's kind of what I'm seeing happen. I like Chris Brooks, and like we said last week, I think he's been really coming along as like a singles wrestler, especially with Lycos off out.
Yeah, he's underrated as a singles worker, I think.
Right, and I think this kind of continues that narrative of him being underrated, but starting to get recognized as a really solid wrestler, like singles wrestler.
Yeah, I hope so. I think he deserves a run at the title as well. I think the fact that he's kept working and he's been working great matches in the sort of stuff he wasn't doing before, running singles matches and doing it well, I think he's earned his spot.
Oh, definitely. I think, regardless, I think this is going to be a great match. I like all three of these guys. And it's, I think it's a good match because all three wrestled completely different styles.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of clash of styles is going to be really good in this match.
Yeah, I think so. I'm quite interested to see Haskins and Brooks going at each other.
That is
I don't think I've ever seen that anywhere before. So I don't think I've ever seen them two wrestle each other before.
Yeah.
So I think that's the dynamic I'm most interested there is to see how their two styles work together.
I think that like could be a very interesting so style. Different. Yeah. And so that brings us to the main event, Walter, the champion, the world champion, versus Zack Sabre Jr. coming fresh off of New Japan. And I think this is going to be hell of a match.
Yeah, it's going to be really, again, like we were saying in the last match, the clash of styles is going to be really interesting. I haven't seen Zack Sabre Jr. work that many big guys, really. He doesn't tend to take on the bigger fellas.
He's been doing it a lot in New Japan, because he's actually, even though he's all of 180 or whatever, he's in the heavyweight division in New Japan. So he has taken on the bigger guys over there.
Yeah.
And he's had great matches with, like, Tanahashi, who's a really big guy, like, shockingly big guy when you actually look at him. Naito, Sonata, who's, I think, you know, on the bigger side. But, again, none of them are really that Walter size. That's
super heavy. I did love him wrestling. I saw his match not long ago with Naito. That was a really, really good match.
That was a great match. I love that match.
Yeah.
But
and I loved his promo afterwards as well. was that who's Tranquilo now, dickhead?
Funny. And also when he was like, when he faced Evil, who again is also a really, you know, a real stocky big guy, and he called him Evanescence and Zack Sabre Jr.'s Susie and the Banshees. God, yeah. I love Zack.
He's so good at it.
Which. So, where do we see this match going?
I think it's just going to be a really fun match. I can't imagine any situation where Walter doesn't retain the title.
I don't see that either. I would love to see Zack win it and then take it to New Japan like he did when he was running that Zacky 3 belt gimmick.
Yeah.
Where he had the PWG Rev Pro and I forget what the other belt was, but it might have been one of the New Japan like tags or triple tags, whatever. But you know, when he would come out wearing all of his belts, I thought that was really great. And I would love to see Progress get on that New Japan level if he were to take it over there. But again, I don't see Walter losing this one. I think he retains, and the era Walter continues.
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't mind seeing Zack win it, but I think he's just so tied up bookings wise. I just don't think it'd work.
It would be really difficult to get him back on a constant basis to where, you know. I mean, I think even if he wanted him like every other chapter, I think it would be kind of tough.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it'll be. I don't see him winning. I would love to see it if he does win. But this kind of goes back to, I know Smallman said it a few times on his podcast, where typically Zack Sabre Jr. is one of the first title defenses.
Yeah.
That they always like, whoever like wins
the title. He's almost a gatekeeper, isn't he?
Little bit, yeah, but they know because like he can kind of, it's that they don't need to heat him up. They don't need a storyline for him. They can always just assert him into the main event and people are like, yeah, this makes sense. And also he's going to get the best out of anyone. But we also have to remember that Zack Sabre Jr., the reason why he even has this match is because he won Super Strong Style. And this is him cashing in that opportunity. What's going to happen at Wembley that got pushed back due to New Japan commitments. So this is him. You know, like, there is a little bit of a storyline here. You know, he did win Super Strong Style. He is one of the best tournament wrestlers in the world right now. So the possibility is there.
Yeah, well, I like that. I never really thought of that as, like, yeah, he is, in terms of, like, tournament wrestling, you don't really think of that nowadays, do you? But, yeah, he is sort of quite old school, really, isn't it? Like, he's almost a tournament specialist at this point.
Well, I know when they were really pushing that fact when he went through the New Japan Cup in these last winter, where they were saying, like, they kept saying, like, he's won Bola. And now, I mean, he's won, like, three of the biggest, like, single elimination tournaments out there. Bola, Super Strong Style, and New Japan Cup. And I think he's also won, what's the WXW tournament?
Yeah, 16 karat.
Yeah, and he's also,
16 road to 16 karat gold.
Yeah, and he's also a 16 karat gold winner. So he has, like, pretty much four of the biggest single elimination tournaments. Outside, you know, I mean, really going now that WWE hasn't ranked King of the Ring in forever. So, you know, like that is one of his, like, main, like, character traits right now is that he's.
Yeah, because he had a good run in the Cruiserweight tournament as well.
That, yeah, he was a semifinalist, and literally the only reason why he didn't win is because he was, like, declined a contract.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they, like, he really does do really well in tournaments, and I think he had a pretty good showing in the G1 this year, from what I remember. So, yeah, so we'll see if they play that out and he gets the win. But I don't see Walter losing this.
Yeah, definitely, I agree.
All right, so that takes care of Pumpkin Spice Progress. Stay tuned next week as we go, you know, match by match and give you our review of the card. But now we're going to go into Brits Abroad. Big match this week. Speaking of tournaments, it was the semi-final match of Tony Storm versus Mako Satomura. And Tack, you haven't seen this yet, but I'm telling you, this is a match of the year candidate.
Yeah?
I love this match. This was our Sarah, a good friend of ours, was saying she watched this match and cried the entire second half.
Oh, wow.
It's truly,
I mean, I didn't expect anything less. That was sort of, they were on a collision course, weren't they? And that's what I was hoping when I saw the brackets originally. I was hoping this match had come up.
I thought that they would have to be dumb not to run this match. But I'm telling, like, if you haven't seen it, run, don't walk, to go see this match. Because, like I said, regardless of gender, this isn't a women's match of the year contender. This is match of the year contender, full stop. And I love this match. Tony Storm, Mako Satomura went after it. Satomura, I think, you know, they have wrestled once or twice before. And it was, I think, a time limit draw before this one. And then...
Was that in Stardom?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure they had a time limit draw in Stardom, which I saw, which was a really good match.
Right, and I think it was Stardom, but this match, I'm pretty sure, took that and elevated it, because Satomura was laying it in, Tony Storm was getting her stuff in, and it was, like I said, like, from jump, I had my mouth was on the floor. I thought it was a great, great match. Satomura was snug with her strikes, and Tony Storm, you know, she was given receipts, and that final stretch was awesome. And I think I talked about this in the Facebook group, the group that we're a part of, where it built like a Japanese match.
Yeah,
where it was slow in the beginning, kind of trading holds, and then they flipped the switch, and then next thing you know, you're just trading finishers,
kicking lumps out of each other. Yeah.
Oh, it was a proper good match. Like, I can't recommend it enough. Like I said, it was just like a blur. I'm probably gonna watch it like once or twice more.
Oh, I'm gonna get to that later on. I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, it was a great match, and Toni Storm ended up picking up the win against Miko Satomura. So the way it ended, spoilers, they actually kicked out of each other's finishers, and then Toni ended up winning or hitting a second Storm Zero to pick up the win. But like I said, it was. If Meltzer doesn't give it 5 stars, I don't know what he's doing.
Oh, wow, that good, really?
I think so. If it's not 5, it's at least 4.75.
Oh, awesome.
But again, I'm not one of those guys that's like lives and dies by Melts, but I think it was that high. Like it,
well, so that's Toni in the final, which they have announced now is at Evolution as well, isn't it? The final.
Yes, so that'll be happening later tonight, my time.
Yeah.
Later, probably tomorrow morning, your time.
Yeah, so I think it starts at like midnight our time.
Yeah, because I think it's like 4 my time. Yeah. So she will be facing Io Shirai, who Io Shirai beat Rhea Ripley in the other semifinal in another great match. That was also another great match. And that was actually, if we're expanding the empire out to Australia, our other colonial cousins, Rhea Ripley had a great match, and I think that was her coming out party.
Yeah.
Last week, I think, kind of had her coming out as a character, and this week came out as the full package.
Oh, good, yeah. I was hoping that this match would sort of flesh her in-ring ability out a bit, because she is really good.
I don't think
they've really shown off that much up until this point.
She, from the moment she walked out, was working like her character. So you know that like kind of thing where she like headbangs and then stomps and it's kind of weird. But you know that thing, yeah. That's kind of like her entrance thing. She like headbangs and then like does this like big stomp. I don't know why, but yeah. She does. Well, she stomped and then she kind of like tapped her knee.
All right, okay.
As a little like like,
oh, that's mean.
Yeah, that's mean. And she did that a few times like during her entrance, and I thought that was awesome. Where it wasn't big, but it was enough of a nod, like, yeah, I took her knee out.
Yeah.
So, but Rhea Ripley really came on in this one, and her aggression was, I think, the big thing that kind of came out. She was on Io Shirai from Jump Street.
Yeah, that's her big selling point to me, is a strength and her aggression.
Well, and before, like, the aggression was kind of there, but this is where you kind of saw, like, things clicked for her and what she wanted or what she needed out of it. And it, like I said, like, there's a, like, couple things. She kind of looks a little bit to the camera a little too much for my liking. But, yeah. I mean, again, like, when you're only style, like, when you've only learned, you know, WWE style, and you don't know, you know, to play to the audience and not the camera.
Yeah.
It's a little different. But again, like, this match, I think, is Rhea Ripley's coming out party, which I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but where we know things go from here with her, yeah. I think this match set all that in motion.
Okay, yeah, brilliant.
And we'll get, and I, you know what I'm talking about with that, right? Again, I don't want to get into spoilers.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into spoilers, and we'll definitely come back to this when that comes around. But I think all that was set in motion with this match.
So yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
And but that does bring us Toni Storm versus Io Shirai in the main event of the Mae Young Classic tonight. At WWE Evolution, and I think this is a little funny because this kind of continues that WWE thing that's kind of going on right now in NXT, where it's like, hey, don't pay attention to the indies, but every big main event we're going to give you, or every big thing happened 5 years ago on some random indie show. So right now with Toni Storm and Io Shirai,
yeah,
they wrestled multiple times in Stardom. Yeah. They know each other very well. You know, the Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne has been done a bunch of times on the UK indie shows.
Yeah, it's quite clever booking, really, from WWE, that is, because they already know that they've got a great match.
Right.
Before it's even started, it's guaranteed to be a really good match because they've seen it happen before. They know that chemistry and that ability is there between the two of them.
Oh, 100%. I think that kind of helps them. And I think that's maybe why they put Toni Storm against most of the Japanese girls. It's because Toni Storm spent most of her time in Japan.
Yeah. You know? It's almost like, it makes me think of when they do that, where they basically replay an indie match, but in their ring. It makes me think of, you know, like when a band does a cover song, but you don't know it's a cover song.
Yeah.
And then you find out later that, oh wow, someone else recorded that like 40 years ago. It's just a cover. Like, but you don't really know at the time. Is that's the wrestling equivalent of that, where they just sort of WWE do their cover version of it, of the same match, and then when you go looking on YouTube or whatever, and you find out, oh wow, that's happened like 3 times before at these other promotions.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much a good analogy for it, where you're like, oh wait, so this has happened. And I think this, like, if you go on like wrestling Twitter or whatever, and I know like there are some really dark spots in wrestling Twitter and dark corners, I try not to go, but you know, a lot of that, the pro WWE guys are like, oh, if it doesn't happen in a WWE ring, then it doesn't count, and da 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 da, it doesn't matter. I've seen that happen, like, I've seen that sentiment kind of bandied about a little bit. But to see then, like, all the matches that they end up marking out over, quote unquote, are those things that, like, the guys on the indie, like, you know, the fans that have, you know, been following the indies, like, yeah, we've seen this match 5 times in, you know, Fight Club Pro or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it's just kind of, I like it when they don't put like the WWE style on it. And I think that's what the Toni Storm Mika Satomura style or match was so great, is because it didn't have that WWE style to it. They let them go out and run basically a Japanese Joshi match.
Yeah.
And I think it's better when you use the WWE style to kind of add a thing here, add a thing there to an already existing style, versus just taking these square pegs and trying to fit them into the round hole.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But regardless, I think Toni Storm and Io Shirai are going to be one of the better matches on the card tonight, outside of Becky Lynch, who I guess we should probably talk of. She is a part of the Empire, depending on how you feel about Ireland. But
I'll consider her one of our own.
All right. So let's get in a little bit of that. Also going into Evolution tonight, she will be facing Charlotte Flair as the SmackDown Women's Champion. Becky Lynch, probably best character going right now in WWE.
Yeah, I could agree with that, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I really like that. I've been waiting so long for her to turn heel.
And she finally did, and it's kind of running into this weird Stone Cold territory where the fans just don't want to boo her, because again, she hasn't said anything wrong. Everything she said, she's been right on, and has, you know, clear grievances and clear reasons why she should hate Charlotte Flair. But have you seen?
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with her.
It really is. Did you see on Up Up Down Down this week? They had like a little mini tournament for Evolution. It was like her. It was like Becky Lynch, Zelina Vega, the Iconics, and Asuka, and they were playing 2K19.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
And Becky Lynch faced Zelina Vega, and Vega picked Charlotte. And Becky Lynch, like, was one, talking crap about Charlotte the entire time, and then two, like, kind of did that thing where you run out during the entrance and jump from behind, as like to kind of continue that hatred of her.
Yeah.
So I thought that was hilarious.
She's really sticking to a character with everything, with Twitter and everything.
Yeah, and I think it's great. I think it's hilarious, and I think it's I like I said, she's probably the most fully fleshed character going right now.
Well, it was a couple of months ago when they did the, or was it last year when they did the first mixed match challenge?
Oh,
and Sami Zayn was desperately trying to get her to turn heel.
Yes.
And she wouldn't. And then when she finally turned, like the first person to tweet with Sami Zayn with finally. So I kind of think, I think Sammy's behind it all. I think Sammy got in her ear.
Oh, that'd be great. If that, if they ended up playing that, that would be
great.
So that brings us to NXT UK. We had our second episode this week. Overall, what did you think?
Yeah, it was it wasn't quite up to the standard of the first show, but you know, it's an ongoing series, so it's not always going to be like stunning match after stunning match. It's, you've got to build stories and things. So yeah, I thought it was really strong.
Yeah. So we had Liguero. He made his NXT UK debut against the part of the 198, Mike Wildboar Hitchman. I thought this was a pretty good match.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, good. Just a standard card opener, like that, that kind of match that gets the crowd involved and is good fun. And I'm always happy to see Liguero anyway.
Yeah, Liguero wrestling his fifth match of the day. He defeated Mike. The Wild Boar, and I like you said, I thought this was a good kind of opening match, get the card going a little bit, get the crowd back into it.
Yeah, hopefully they use Liguero for more than just, I mean, with him getting a win on his first TV appearance, I think they are going to use him for more than just card fodder, which is what he gets used as a lot on the indies. I'm hoping he's going to get a bit of a story and something interesting to do.
I think that would
as the weeks go on.
I think that would be good. It'll be interesting to see if he keeps the Union Jack mask going.
Yeah.
Which he's got like 90 different outfits. I think it'd be
good. Oh, he's got so many. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I like to see him bring the Origin mask back, but regardless.
Oh, it was like he's got an orange and black one that looks kind of like Deathstroke from Batman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really cool. That's my favorite one of his.
Oh, I'd have to keep an eye out for that one. That sounds really good. So we'll see if he kind of keeps the Union Jack thing going. But I thought that was a really good match. I like Liguero. I like Hitchman. He's coming on me. I haven't really seen him too much lately. But, you know, outside of the 198. But
yeah, he's just a little block. He's a block of beef, ain't he? He's like a little he's a slab of a man.
He's like, yeah, just all 5'4", 5'4" wide, just nothing but muscle and stumpy legs.
Yeah.
So this brings us to the second match, Dakota Kai versus Killer Kelly. I thought this was a solid match. I love both of them. Killer Kelly's really been growing on me lately. I love her intensity.
Yeah, there was a few spots that were a bit dodgy, like kicks that weren't quite connected and things like that. But yeah, it was a good match, but I felt like, I actually felt like Dakota Kai seemed a little bit, maybe nervous or something. I don't know. There was a few spots where things just didn't quite connect, I thought.
Yeah.
It was still a good match. I really don't like that finisher that Dakota Kai is using.
The modified Code Red backstabber.
I can't tell if every time I've seen her do it, it's been botched, or if it just looks really untidy. And I don't know, there's just something about it that I don't understand why, because she's quite small, that she'd, like, her finisher would be to pull a bigger wrestler on top of her. Does that make sense to you?
It does. No, it does. I just, like, I've seen it hit well.
Yeah.
But the odds of it actually getting hit perfectly is few and far between, I guess.
Yeah.
And to kind of, I don't know. Well, I mean, like, I get, like, you don't want her using the double stomp finish because that's Devitt's.
Yeah.
If she gets pulled up, then you don't want, you know, you don't want two finishers of the same kind.
I don't know why she can't use that running corner kick as a finish, because it looks fucking devastating every time she does it.
That is, Sami Zayn. It's too close to the Huluva kick.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
I'm guessing. I love her face wash kick. I think it's great, but yeah, I think that's got to be the reason why. But I don't know.
It was a fun match. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fun match. I love Killer Kelly. I think she has a lot of intensity that I think it can be lacking a little bit in the women's division sometimes.
Yeah.
Where she really is, you know, kind of has that killer vibe. Like, I will kick the crap out of you. So.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're raised in Portugal and then trained in Germany. That's just a volatile combination.
Oh, I can imagine. So, Dakota Kai, she ends up beating Killer Kelly. The promo afterwards, I could have done without.
Didn't
quite sane. It was kind of like the...
Babyface pandering cranked up to the max, wasn't it?
Right. It was just kind of the same as the British Strong Style promo from last week, except it didn't have the charisma of Trent Seven to carry it.
Yeah.
Where it was like, hey, I'm here to win matches and there's probably going to be a championship and I want to go after that. And it's like, all right.
I hate when they do that. I know it's like a babyface trope, but I hate when they do the, I've been all over the world and wrestled in every country, but this crowd right here is the best one I'll ever work in front of.
Yeah.
It's like, she may as well just hold the mic and go, I'm a babyface. You should all cheer for me because I'm the babyface.
Right,
I'm the goodie. It's a bit redundant. I think after she worked so well as the baby face in the match, you don't need to then like drive that point home so hard.
Right, but it's also episode two, so they're trying to introduce the characters and everything, which is kind of weird because most of these characters are already, you know, kind of fully fleshed from the indie scene, and they're not changing anyone, really.
No, that's one thing I've noticed so far. Yeah, everyone's pretty much doing what they always do.
Right.
It's good because they're not... I think that's been an issue with some people in WWE where they've tried to cram them into a character when they've worked something else for so long. And I think that can do a lot of damage. I think it's quite good that they're... So far, everyone seems to be just working their usual gimmick.
True. It's very true. But overall, I like Dakota Kai and I like Killer Kelly, and I think it'll be really interesting to kind of see where they take Dakota Kai, if they're going to kind of let her be more of the NXT UK division, or if they're going to like continue with her on NXT TV in the States. Because she is based out of Orlando, so I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing more of her over here.
I wouldn't mind it either. So, we'll see. So, but that brings us to the third segment, which is, speaking of promos, the god of heel promos himself, Gibson, comes out, and God bless him. God bless Zach Gibson, because he can take what the crowd is doing and turn on it.
It was unbelievable, wasn't it? Like, the noise in that place.
One thing I wasn't too happy, maybe it's because I was listening to headphones as I was, like, you know, my wife was sleeping, so I had it in my headphones, and I also had the World Series on in the background. But it did seem like they were piping in a little bit of the booze, which I don't understand why you got to do that during a Gibson promo.
Yeah.
But maybe there were some sound issues. And then, because you could kind of tell when the crowd would start doing the, you know, stand up if you hate Gibson songs. Like,
yeah.
It would be more natural sounding than when they were booing, but
yeah, I didn't notice that actually. But I just had it on sort of half watching at that point. But yeah, it was, and it was jarring again, like you said last week about having that venue where he's cutting this, and he's literally cutting a heel promo that's aimed at the crowd with his back to a wall.
Yeah.
It is strange, isn't it? It's like, I can't sort of, I don't know, I just can't get my head around it. It doesn't seem right at all.
It's just a difficult Like you said, it's just a difficult kind of like setting, like just the way they had everything set up. I get why they had it set up the way they did, but at the same time, like, not quite sure if that's the best venue to run wrestling in, at least like televised wrestling.
Yeah, it's like, it's a classic British venue, but it's not a classic wrestling venue.
Yeah.
So yeah, it seemed, I don't know, I couldn't get my head around why they'd really put wrestling there, but I mean, I guess they have their reasons. Just don't really know what they are.
Right. Right. But so Gibson continues to run down pretty much why he, you know, he won the tournament. He should have got he should have got a rematch against Dunn.
Great whiny baby face promo, whiny heel promo.
But again, he was also making some very solid points where he had wrestled this tournament. He had four matches the night before. Then he had a match against Dunn, and Dunn was fresh, and he pushed him to the limit. And then
you just like to sympathize with the heels. That's
I just love sympathizing with Zach Gibson. That's what it is.
I will never sympathize with Zach Gibson. Ever. Even if he had to wrestle 27 people to get his title shot and then lost, I will never sympathize with Zach Gibson.
I'm a fan of logic and truth. And Gibson uses both.
He deserves neither, though.
Regardless, Noam Abdar comes out after Gibson runs him down for his 20 different poses and taunts. Which then brings out Johnny Saint, which I love, doesn't like reprimand either of them.
Yeah.
Like in front of the crowd, actually pulls him back, like he's an angry headmaster, back to his office.
Have you ever done that as a teacher? Have you ever done that? My office now. Have you ever had to do that?
I haven't done it back, like, because my office is my class, but I will pull kids back, like, out into like the hallway or outside the class to talk to them. Like if it's in the middle of class and they're doing stuff, I'll, like, outside now, and then I'll kind of pull them back and then address whatever's happening, like, outside of everyone.
That gave me like Vietnam style flashbacks, man. The amount of times I was told to get to the office when I was at school is like every other day. It was like I was being screamed at to get back to the office. So that was just, that felt just like my old headmaster give me a bollocking.
Which I thought was great. So that sets up next week's main event. That'll be Gibson versus Dar. I think it's going to be a great match. And speaking of headmasters, we get Edward Jerome Dennis doing what, again, he does best, talking with truth and logic.
It was such a good vignette because he never... It's like you've said a few times about him. He's never wrong, and he everything he said was perfectly right. But he says it with such like so much aggression, and like he's definitely coming in as a heel now. Like after that promo, there's no way he comes in anything but a heel. So it's going to be interesting to see how they actually do that once he's introduced.
I
love that vignette so much.
I think I figured out why I connect with Eddie Dennis so much, besides being a teacher. Before I went back to school to be a teacher, I was working, I was a reporter here. I was like on, you know, I was a TV reporter, broadcast journalist, whatever. And I was making like crap money. And I like, you know, like for those that don't know, like I've, you know, two-time Iraq war veteran. You know, I grinded through my 20s, like, having to, like, deal with, like, kind of the fallout from that. I also, but then I went back to school and got my degree, and then I got this job, and it was, like, making $12 an hour for a degree, for a job that, like, made, or that, like, required a bachelor's degree. So, I was making $12 an hour, which I could have made just as much at In-N-Out, or probably more at In-N-Out, which is like a fast food joint out here. Like that actually pays us.
We got one in Birmingham.
Oh, really? You have an In-N-Out in Birmingham?
We got an In-N-Out, yeah. And a hot burger.
God, I love Birmingham. See, again, this is why I love Birmingham. I'm moving there tomorrow. now that I know that there's an in and out. But regardless, so I was seeing like a lot of my friends who didn't go to school, didn't go in the army, kind of like fall into these jobs that were like $19, $20 an hour and buying them nice houses and everything. And I'm like grinding by just to like kind of make it in Chico. Yeah. And I had that same feeling of like, no. You guys were living with your parents for 7 years and I was out doing X, Y, and Z. And so that really resonates with me when he was saying like, no, I was a principal. I was out doing this. You were living for free with your parents while you were flying. Best thing, when you flew yourselves to Japan.
Yeah.
Again, Eddie Dennis is doing nothing but truth, but the way he says it is what makes him a heel.
It's like that trope, isn't he? He's like Eddie Dennis is your spirit animal.
Exactly. He really is. He really is. And like, ever since he turned on Andrews last year at Ali Pali, like, and then he started like cutting those promos, I was like, no, he's talking, he's saying the truth. There's nothing I can do to go against him. But what did you think of the vignette?
I loved it because they haven't just thrown up like it. Even though it's certainly had a much more of a heelish feel to it this week, it's not. It's not full on heel promo. It's just give a little bit of mystique to it, and like you say, there's not a lot you can disagree with in what he's saying. It's just seeing how when we actually see him in the ring, how he's going to get his point across.
Right. I think he'll end up like jumping done, I think.
Yeah, because it was such a good vignette. It just got me so excited to see him actually working.
Yeah. I think it's going to be great when he does make his debut. But it's weird that they're doing a little bit of a slow burn with him.
Yeah, I do hope they kind of drag it out a little bit, to be honest. I hope we don't see him for another couple of episodes. And really keep building this character with the vignettes. So that by the time he hits the ring, he's got a full character built up.
Well, when was this taped again? Do you remember?
A couple of months ago now. I can tell you exactly because my NXT t-shirt that I bought at the Birmingham show is in front of me and it's got the dates on the back. It was July 28th and 29th.
Was he still injured during this time?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly.
So maybe that's why they're doing the vignettes.
Yeah, I know he wasn't hurt in August because I'm pretty sure he was at the Birmingham tapings at the end of August.
Right. So maybe I can't remember because he was kind of, you know,
it was about that time that he came back around the end of July, beginning of August was about when he came back.
Right. So maybe he still was kind of didn't quite have the go ahead to get back in the ring. So maybe that's why they're going with the vignettes.
Yeah. Which is the perfect way to introduce him if that's the case.
Oh, 100%. 100%. So we had another promo on the show, and that was Danny Burch, kind of a reintroduction promo.
Yeah.
And I liked it. Danny Burch, I think, is a great great.
Yeah, he's almost like the old school of the show, isn't he? I think he's going to be.
For sure. I think he is that old school, like, hard man
character. He almost feels like the last of, like, the, like, 10 years or so ago. He was the best of the bunch, but that wasn't the British wrestler. The sort of ex-military guy who then becomes like a fitness guy and then just sort of goes into wrestling. That was pretty much the standard for British wrestling sort of 10 years or so ago.
Oh, really?
And he's kind of the only one of that type that's left now. There isn't any others I can really put my finger on. Off the top of my head, it was still working now. So he feels like a bit of a throwback to me because I haven't really seen. He was hinting more towards obviously he's going to wrestle a more British style because he's worked in America for a couple of years, so he's got a more American style of wrestling now when he's on NXT. But I'm hoping he goes back to his sort of British roots when we finally see him wrestle for NXT UK.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it says that he debuted in 2003. which would make sense about why he has that kind of throwback to
yeah.
a little bit of like the, you know, the Doug Williams era.
Yeah. So. I definitely saw him wrestle like here and there on shows, like local shows and stuff. I remember him having a really vicious European uppercut finisher, which I don't think he uses anymore.
Oh.
Where he does like a like a fireman's carry, and then he like throws them up and hits them with a like a sick European uppercut.
Oh my! So it's like it's a go finished. To sleep, but instead of a knee, it's an European.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like it's a go to sleep with a European uppercut instead of a knee.
Oh wow!
And I don't think I've not seen him use that since he's been in NXT, but I'd love to see him use that again, because I remember that's the main thing I remember of him from seeing him years ago.
Man, that sounds awesome! I want to see that.
Yeah, it's definitely, it'll be on YouTube somewhere, I would have thought.
All right, I'll look it up. I'll look it up after we're done. And that brings us to the main event, Tyler Bate versus defeating Wolfgang. What'd you think of this match?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Really good. I love Tyler Bate in that little man versus big man role. It was pretty much like a mini version of the Progress Wembley main event.
Yeah.
Little fella wrestling the big fella, but obviously with a slightly different finish. But yeah, it was... Yeah, I really enjoyed that match, actually.
I thought it was a good match. I'm not... Wolfgang doesn't quite do it for me. But...
Yeah.
I get it. I see where he can for other guys.
Yeah. He's more of a... What I haven't really seen of him in WWE is he's more of a character than... Like, his character's the big part of his... As a wrestler, he's, the character is a big part of it, which you don't really see that in WWE. He's more just sort of a big guy wrestler.
Oh, okay.
He actually has like a really good character. He's got a great promo on him when you give him the mic and let him go as well.
What's his character like? Because he's from ICW, right? Up in yes. Glasgow?
Yeah. He's just a big, big, angry, aggressive jock, basically.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of like... it sounds kind of like almost xenophobic to say it, but his character kind of is Groundskeeper Willie off The Simpsons. Just like shouting madman, but he can back it up in the ring kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, love to see that.
I'm glad we got to see his that's the spear that's almost like a he hits the spear, but then he kind of slams onto the mat afterwards, almost like an STF kind of thing.
Oh, right.
STO kind of thing, sorry. Like, I'm glad we got to see that, because he's not used that before. I really like that. I think he used to use that as a finish.
Huh.
But yeah, I really like that spear that he does. He's really good.
Yeah.
I hate seeing him do a swanton every time he does it, because I just feel like he's too big and he's going to hurt himself.
Yeah. I think the swanton, you kind of have to be a little more graceful for it to look good.
And yeah, that's what injured him before, I think.
Oh, is it?
So he hurt his knee, yeah. I think he over-rotated and landed and jacked his knee up.
Yeah, so yeah, I could see then how it kind of turns into like a, please don't. Like whenever he goes like up for it, like,
yeah.
Maybe let's not do this. But yeah, I like the spear. I think that, like you said, I think that should be the finish.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked Tyler Bates' strongman spots.
I always enjoyed
that. Like, I like the... it's almost like a reversal kind of thing of like the, you get like the classic big men who do like cruiserweight moves.
Yeah. And then like Tyler's the cruiserweight that can do the big man moves.
Exactly. Yeah. He's the cruiserweight. He does the strongman stuff, which is kind of a cool, like flip of that role, which I really enjoy about him.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's really awesome. So, well, I thought, again, this week wasn't as strong as last week's, but
no.
We'll see as we continue on into next week and kind of as we continue to kind of go through these tapings.
It's still a solid show. Like, it's still one of the better wrestling shows around at the minute, but it's obviously it's not going to be like gold every week.
Right, that's kind of the problem with, you know, weekly television is you're not going to quite get them.
It's more consistency is what they need. If it's consistently above average, then that's what's going to keep it going as a show, I think.
Oh, for sure. All right, well, I think that's about does it. We'll let you get back. I know I got to get back to to making this test so I can torture my kids a little more on, you know, the literary conflicts, man versus self and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm going to hunt a legendary beaver now. Well, that's my plan for the evening. I've been looking for him for a couple of hours now, and I've found a load of his mates, but I can't find the one that I need, so I'm going to go hunting for a legendary beaver.
A beaver.
Yeah, a legendary beaver. A legendary beaver. Bigger than beaver. The other ones, yeah. Apparently it's quite aggressive as well.
Do you have beavers in the UK?
No, we used to, but they've been extinct here for a long time now. Apparently they're trying to reintroduce them in Scotland.
Oh, really? Oh, along with wolves. Like, yeah. Up north.
And wolves as well, apparently. They've been talking about that for years, bringing wolves back to Scotland.
Was there a big wolf population in Scotland?
Yeah, the Highlands used to be like full of, and bears and all sorts we used to have.
Really?
Like, you're talking like hundreds of years ago till they were all hunted for their fur and stuff. But,
right.
Yeah, we used to be crammed full of nature, and then like man came along and kind of ruined it.
Well, and then the Industrial Revolution kind of came in.
Yeah, now we've got like pigeons, rats, foxes. That's pretty much it, really.
Foxes are pretty cool.
Sometimes you'll see a squirrel, like occasionally, but not that often.
Oh, yeah, there we go. The Eurasian beaver.
Let's see. There you go, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Did you just... I hope you just Googled British beaver with your safe search on.
I really... Well, now I know I got to stick away. I got to stay away from the fake taxis. That's the key. When you... If I don't have safe search on, you got to stay away from the fake taxis. Yeah. But yeah, it looks like it's... They do have it in Great Britain, so it must still be a little above. Looks like, according to the map on Wikipedia, it's up in Scotland.
Yeah, they're always like reintroducing things up there and stuff. Like, they reintroduced wolves the first time and they all just died. I think it was like 2002 or somewhere around there. They put like 20 wolves in Scotland and they all just died.
What would their food source be?
Oh, deers. There's like thousands of deers in Scotland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they go on like big culls, you know, like they'll go in like, they'll have like a couple of weeks where they just hunt hundreds of them because they're everywhere.
Is it like kind of like more of a nuisance out there?
Yeah, big time, yeah.
Is it the Scottish red deer? I'm just Wikipedia-ing now. Yeah. I'm Wikipedia-ing like any and all like fauna in the UK. Huh. I didn't know that. Yeah, well, I guess that makes sense. Like the Nightfall and James Bond had a whole, right? That was like their big thing, the stag.
Yeah,
I don't know. Regardless, anyway,
we don't have like predators, so yeah, other than like badgers and foxes.
I love foxes though. I used to have a fox that like lived out by my house when we lived out in like 5 acres of orchards, and we had like a fox that kind of lived around us. Pretty cool.
Little scamps.
Yeah, they're pretty rad. Anyway, I'll let you get hunting that legendary beaver.
I could be up to anything. If someone heard that out of context.
That's awesome. All right, man. I'll talk to you next week.
Awesome, man. Speak to you soon.
All right. Sounds good.